This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. It feels a little bit earlier for me this morning, Howard, and that's because we've moved to our winter clock.
But it's very late this year, isn't it?
No, it's actually the same as has been the case over the last few years. A few years ago, Israel decided that winter time would start at the end of October, rather than what used to be the case, which is before Slichot, heading into the Chagim.
Yes,
so that was a lot earlier, or depends on whether, you know, Rosh Hashanah was early or it was late, you know,
right,
all that whole discussion.
Whole thing, yeah.
But now that's been taken away, and it's now the end of October, and there is definitely something to be said for it. The mornings are now earlier because we've moved our clocks back. And, of course, I feel like I'm on air with you an hour earlier than usual. And I'm guessing that the Israeli listeners, of whom there are quite a few, I understand, they would perhaps have more opportunity to listen live rather than have to rely on the podcast, because many of them will probably be on their way to work, as indeed the listeners are in South Africa. So that's where we are in terms of our winter clocks at the moment. Just remember, for those of you who are friends, relatives, work colleagues in Israel, we're now on exactly the same time, at least until March of next year. There is this elephant in the room about Twitter, isn't there? And I know it doesn't really pertain specifically to Israel, but I can't help talking a little bit about it after the whole Kanye West fiasco. And now, of course, Elon Musk taking over as owner of Twitter and firing the team in Twitter, and then deciding that those people who had been banned for inappropriate comments on the platform will now be unbanned in the interests of freedom of speech. So we've got two real issues at play here about whether there is freedom of speech to such a degree that you can even be anti-Semitic and vitriolic in the way that you express yourself on Twitter. Is that okay? Or do we need people to silence those who potentially create or make comments which are beyond what can be considered to be acceptable? And then, of course, the question is, what is acceptable and what's not acceptable? Somebody's got to make the rules and someone's got to adhere to the rules. And of course, everybody will complain about the rules. I don't know what you guys think about this argument, because it is a very substantial issue that we need to talk about, isn't it?
So firstly, I find the hysteria around Twitter to be completely ridiculous. You know, people talking about it as though last week it was a platform of love and light. It really wasn't. It was a platform of hate and all sorts of other things. You know, so now people making out that, oh my gosh, the gates of hell have opened up and Twitter's going to become a toxic place. Well, it already was. So that's my first problem with it. The second issue, so it's this hyperbolic, hysterical reaction that always makes me itch, because I'm kind of allergic to it. But the second part of it is that Twitter were doing a pretty lousy job of monitoring hate speech. You can't throw off Donald Trump because you don't like his political views, but keep on the Ayatollah Khamenei who talks about killing Jews and Israelis and destroying Israel. So if you're doing a reasonable or semi-reasonable job of monitoring it, then I think there's an argument. But there isn't. They were doing an appalling job of it. And therefore, I would say to you that, well, now let's see what the new dispensation and the new order brings before we criticize it. I mean, that's my thought.
I think that monitoring and policing these things is a thankless job, and I don't think that anybody who decides to try to monitor it and to exclude hate speech, if that's the policy, is ever going to be able to do it completely and consistently across the board, and they will always stand accused of taking sides on certain issues and not taking sides enough on other issues, that's always going to be one of the problems that they're going to have to encounter. But I suppose, you know, my question is, let's look at Kanye West, who was actually one of the people who was banned on Twitter. And, you know, do we feel that he should have the right to say the things that he says on Twitter, on social media? Forget Twitter specifically. Use any social media platform. Is that equal to freedom of speech? Do we think that people like him should be allowed to spout vitriol, anti-Semitic talk, and anything else that comes with it? Might not be anti-Semitic, it might be racist in many other different perspectives. Should they be allowed to have their say on social media in the interests of freedom of speech? That's the question that I'm asking myself, because recognizing how difficult it is to police it. So that's just my say for the morning. One of the nice things that I wanted to talk about was Jerusalem's Hotel Yehuda, which has landed on the list of the 2022 World Luxury Hotel Award winners. And this hotel has already won numerous awards, but this year has the title of the best spa hotel in the Middle East, as well as the best luxury hotel for families in the world, apparently. This is a hotel that's located just west of Malqa, on top of what they describe on the website as the gorgeous Masur Hills. And if you want to rent the Canadian suite, which apparently is the most luxurious room in the hotel, you will get two bedrooms, you will get two bathrooms, you will get a living room, a large balcony, and a private jacuzzi for whatever money you pay, and I have no idea what that would cost you. But if you want to hold a bar mitzvah at the hotel shul seats 150 people. So the Hotel Yehuda in Jerusalem, I've never been there, but apparently it's something.
So I'd love to see a link to it, because if it is, I know the hotel very, very well. And it is by Malqa Mall, and it overlooks the hills of Jerusalem. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That is exactly right.
Ah, in fact, yeah. We had a family bar mitzvah there, and so I was there for Shabbat a number of years ago. Absolutely wonderful. Really, really beautiful. And that's really, really nice to hear, that the hotel is being recognized. The other subject, of course, is the election. I couldn't believe this morning, Anthony, around about 6:10, I go through local headlines and international headlines, and the feature's called "This is what happened in the world whilst you were sleeping." And I couldn't believe that on Israel National News, Arut Sheva this morning, the headline was to do with the Democrats and possibly losing the House in the midterm election. This is Israel National News, a day before Israel's election, reporting on the November elections in Israel. Does that tell us that Israelis simply aren't interested in the subject?
Well, it does tell us simply that Israelis are not very interested in the subject. I will tell you that looking at the Israel National News headline right now, it does talk about Gantz's plan to become prime minister and examines what Benny Gantz is trying to do in order to engineer somehow a win in the election tomorrow and somehow to be able to lead a coalition to become prime minister. We do know that Benny Gantz has the desire to become prime minister. And that is one of the problems in the anti-Netanyahu camp, because we have both Gantz and Lapid, who both have pretensions to be prime minister, and it creates some sort of a conflict in the anti-Netanyahu camp such that it strengthens Netanyahu's quest to become prime minister again. But back to your question, Howard, tomorrow is more of a shopping day than it is an election day. And you have no idea how shops and malls across Israel are advertising special deals, special activities that will be held tomorrow in order to attract people. Because, of course, it is officially a holiday day, and therefore people will be available to go to malls and to be able to spend their dollar on things that perhaps they might not have been able to do over Shabbat due to religious observance issues, and now they have the opportunity to do so. So really, tomorrow is more about a shopping day than it is about an election day. And unfortunately, our fate lies in the hands of what goes on tomorrow. Many of the political parties have come out trying to encourage people to turn up at the polls tomorrow, at least to come and cast your vote. And the National Electoral Commission has run an ad on the radio saying, you need to exercise your vote, no matter who you vote for, but tivcharu or titchatru. That is the message that is being sent in Hebrew, which is exercise your vote or you will have regrets. So that's the message that's being sent by the National Electoral Commission in order to try and attract people to at least exercise their votes. And there is an expectation that there's going to be a relatively low turnout tomorrow because people are just not interested. It's the fifth election in less than 4 years, and people are absolutely dumbstruck and tired of this constant round of election. And I have to say that the most likely outcome of tomorrow's election is another election, because I simply cannot see how anybody is going to be able to form a government tomorrow. The latest opinion polls suggest that opposition leader Netanyahu is one or two seats potentially short of being able to form a coalition. His coalition partners are fairly tightly bound together, so they're unlikely to break ranks in order to join another grouping if they potentially might need a seat or two in order to form a government. I think a lot will depend upon whether some of the smaller parties, which are on the verge of the threshold, on the verge of getting seats, whether they succeed in getting seats or not. That includes Ayelet Shaked's Yamina party. They are currently considered to be below the minimum threshold required to enter the Knesset, 3.25% of the vote. It's equal to about 4 seats in the Knesset. Similarly, with the left-wing Meretz party, who are currently considered to be below the threshold. If either of those parties somehow manage to secure 3.25% of the vote, then the entire picture, the entire makeup of the Knesset could change quite dramatically. So I think it's going to really revolve around which of those parties which are on the edge of potentially gaining entrance to the Knesset or not manage to do so and which don't. Remembering that those parties who don't manage to get the minimum 3.25% vote, their votes simply get turfed into the trash. They get completely thrown away. And of course, it just means a reallocation, because then the total number of votes which are used in order to allocate the Knesset seat becomes smaller as a result of those votes being thrown away. So it's going to be very, very fascinating to see which of those parties manage to secure the 3.25% and which don't. And I think that they are the ones who are really trying to get as many voters through the polls as possible in order to somehow sneak them over the line. So that's really where things stand right now. People don't have any sense of optimism at all. There is a very, very strong public feeling that we don't want to see the return of former Prime Minister Netanyahu for one reason or another. And yet there isn't enough coherence in the anti-Netanyahu camp in order to be able to make that happen on behalf of the voting public. And so the most likely outcome will be either that Netanyahu's coalition squeaks over the line with one seat majority if he's lucky, but more likely either a dead heat with 60 seats each or potentially even a 59-61 in favor of the anti-Netanyahu camp, except for the fact that 61 seats doesn't secure them a coalition, because as I've said before, that includes some of the more radical Arab parties who would never be incorporated into a coalition that's led by Lapid or Gantz. And so it seems highly unlikely that they will be the ones to form the government at the end of tomorrow's vote.
When do we start to get information? When will we start to get a sense?
We will, the first critical moment about what the public have voted comes tomorrow as soon as the polls close. And there is a big moment on TV and everybody will be in front of their TVs at that hour. I think it'll be 10 o'clock tomorrow evening when the polls close, and then they will have the exit polls presented on TV. They've had people at the polling booths all day. They've got the sense of what people are voting. They ask people what they voted. People either tell them or they don't tell them, or they tell lies or whatever it is, and they use that information and they put together what they call the exit polls, and they have an exit poll on every single TV channel, many of whom are conflict with each other. They don't present the same picture. And so tomorrow evening, when the polls close, we will then have this major revelation on TV where we will see what the exit polls have said to the various TV channels, and then we will start to get a sense of whether or not people have turned up and what they might have voted. Having said all of that, the exit polls that are revealed at the time of the close of the polling booths have often proved to be quite inaccurate. So we don't necessarily rely on it, but at least that will be the first picture that we get late tomorrow evening.
And of course, the other big story is that an Israeli was killed and a number of people injured in a terror attacks that took place over the weekend.
Yeah, so very, very briefly, because I know we've only got a few moments, but unfortunately, the spate of terror attacks that we've experienced recently continues. Saturday night, just outside Kiryat Arba, an Arab terrorist turned up at the entrance to the town and then began to fire at people. It seemed to be randomly firing at people who happened to be milling around the entrance to Kiryat Arba. In the process, a civilian man was killed, a man who was about to celebrate his 50th birthday in the coming days, and his son quite seriously injured, but fortunately the son at least managed to survive. In the process also, when Magen David Adom medics were dispatched to the scene because there were a number of people injured in the process, the medic was also shot and fairly seriously injured. He is fighting for his life right now, that Magen David Adom medic. Other people were injured. That was one incident. Yesterday, another incident near Jericho, where five soldiers were run over in a ramming attack, two separate attacks carried out by the same individual. That was ultimately brought to an end by a quick-thinking civilian, a security civilian who happened to be around the area and managed to neutralize the individual who was carrying out these ramming attacks. In the case of Kiryat Arba, a similar outcome. The terrorist who carried out the attack in a car was ultimately killed by some off-duty IDF soldiers, IDF officers who were in the area. And just a very, very, very serious set of events. We understand that the individual who carried out the Kiryat Arba attack, someone by the name of Muhammad Kamal al-Jabari, he apparently was a terminally ill cancer patient who intended to carry out a suicide mission in order to end his life as a martyr. It certainly served his purpose. There were fireworks in Arab towns and villages around the area. Sweets were being handed out as soon as news of this attack took place. This response, the fact that the terror attacks take place, is just very, very serious indeed and extremely worrying. The fact that the general public in the Arab towns and cities then choose to set off fireworks and give out sweets in celebration of these attacks is even more concerning, in my view.
Absolutely. It just is just such an awful thing, and it unfortunately says so much that we almost don't want to know about the situation there. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, that's where we leave it. We'll, of course, chat to you tomorrow, and wish you a fantastic day. We'll speak to you at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.